Hey everybody, Rob Cesternino here, and today I have a very fun interview planned with my friend Ken Raskoff, who spent the last 5 years working in Survivor casting before going back to work with Mark Burnett on scripted production. So if you're interested in how the show gets cast or how to make an application that's going to give you a shot to get noticed, I think you're really going to enjoy this interview. Now, while you're listening, if you want to multitask and get a jump on all the holiday shopping insanity and avoid all of those sticky situations at the stores this week, check out the countdown to Black Friday deals at Amazon.com. You'll find hundreds of markdowns, and you can support the podcast anytime when you start your Amazon purchase with our link, robhasawebsite.com/Amazon in the U.S., or for our listeners in Canada, robhasawebsite.com/Amazon CA. Or to go right to the Countdown to Black Friday deals page, click on the Amazon banners in the right sidebar of robhasawebsite.com. Hey, everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino here with a special bonus interview for you guys here today. I have somebody here in the studio, in the Nicole chair with me, and somebody who I'm very excited to have on because we've talked to lots of different people who have either, you know, of course, the contestants from Survivor and all of the different people who have all these different unique perspectives. And we're going to speak with somebody today who has a long history of working in casting on Survivor. He is currently the senior vice president of scripted features and TV, working at Mark Burnett's production company. Let me welcome in a person who's become a good friend of mine over the years and a good friend of Rob as a podcast. Please welcome in Mr. Ken Raskoff.
Hi.
Ken, how are you?
I'm great. How are you? I'm so excited to be here with the bell and the buzzer, you know, and see where it all happens and Reyes the dog. It's like too exciting.
Yeah, this is very, very fun because, you know, not only do you have all of this wealth of knowledge about all sorts of things about Survivor, you are an amazing Survivor fan.
True.
And know the show backwards and forwards.
Well, I'm amazed at like how you people know the plays. I know the people. I have to tell how I got involved with Survivor because like that will probably set this up. I have a totally different background. I was in the once proud movie of the week universe, making television movies. And I was actually the producer of a film that was shooting in Toronto in spring of 2000. And one of the local actors said to me, "Hey, have you seen this show? It's like a game show where like people are on an island and they vote each other off and they win $1 million. And I swear, I said, "You would have to kill me to watch that show. It sounds horrible." So I, we were wrapping the film and he gave me a VCR of the first three episodes of the show. And I haven't missed an episode on the air since. I have watched every episode of the show. I have laid them all down on DVD. I buy the DVDs. I'm a huge fan of the show. And when the movie of the week tanked, probably with one that I made in 2002, I sat around and I called a friend of mine and I said, "I really love Survivor. Would you hook me up with the casting director? You know, let me buy your lunch or something like that." And he said, "Done." And I took Lynn Spillman, who's my patron saint, out to lunch. And I was just talking about the show because I was really curious. I kept wondering if you set out to cast truck drivers who were ladies, because in 2000, that was like amazing, a lady truck driver. Oh my God. And river raft guides and stuff like that. And we were about at season, I guess in 2005, we were probably at season 9 or 10. And, you know, I was talking about all the casts and how I loved them and like what was going on. And she said, "Come work on the show." And I said, "Oh my God. Okay, sure." Cause like TV movies were dead. I'm walking back to my car and my friend calls me and he says, "I have fixed her up with 20 people. She's already called. You're the first person she really likes." And I went to work on Survivor, and it was really, to this day, it is still probably the most fun I've had working on a job. You know, it's with other people. I didn't have to run things. I didn't have to read scripts. You know, you looked for people, and the answer to the question, "Do you look for lady truck drivers or not?" is still ambiguous. It's still, you know, you find people for the show. And I cast 9 seasons, and then in the middle, I guess the world in which I travel is small enough. I had I produced a film in Florida 1 year, and I had an associate producer, a local associate producer, who said, "Will you meet a friend of mine who's moved out to Los Angeles who wrote a script?" And I met this guy, and I optioned the script. We couldn't sell it, but we worked closely on it. And I was at another company making movies, because they used to make deals with me. And I get this note from this guy. He goes, "Oh, I'm working on a show. I can't tell you about it. I'm in the middle of Borneo. And Rick and Darva were getting married on Fox. Who Wants to Marry a Millionaire?" Oh, at the same time.
Darva Conger.
Darva Conger, the one and only. And I was like fascinated by the genre, because it really hadn't hit. And they were shooting this thing. And so I made a tape and I said, "Be careful, because this thing can like blow up in your face." And I sent him. Anyhow, my friend Tom Shelley ended up becoming one of the executive producers on the show. So we're at the finals for my first season, which is Guatemala, which operated very differently than it operates now. And I'm standing with Tom where it is that we interviewed the people, and we're chatting, and he goes into the room to do the interviews, and he comes out and goes, "Mark Burnett wants to meet with you. You know, he's really interested in your scripted background." And I'm starting my career over. I'm schlepping coffee, you know, which is what you do. I mean, basically, a show business job is just about doing what it is that you do. You know, you make it work. That's like show business. If you have to lay cable, you lay cable. If you don't, you don't. You do something else. And I'm schlepping coffee, and there's this room full of producers, like 20 producers, and Mark Burnett and Lynn and all of these people. And Mark is like, "I have to have you running my scripted department." And like a secretary is chasing me around with a laptop getting my information. And I'm carrying coffee, and I'm going, this does not happen to me. Mm-hmm. This kind of thing does not happen to me. And it was the weirdest thing in the world. So he invited me to come run his scripted division. This was like in 2005. I'd been there 2 months. And I never heard from him again. And so Lynn said, "Well, come back and start." The day I started back for season, I guess if Guatemala was 12, it was 13, which was Panama, they call me. And, you know, they don't know where I am. And they go, "Mark's ready to meet with you." So I go upstairs, and I never went back to Survivor. And I worked for Mark for 3.5 years. And for various reasons, I had to leave the job. I had some personal stuff that I had to tend to at home. And I left the job. And I can talk about that experience if anybody's interested in the scripted experience with Mark. And I called Lynn and I said, "Look, I've left the scripted job. Can I come back?" She said, "Oh my God, come back." So I came back for 21 through, this is the first season that I haven't worked on since 21, which was Nicaragua. So I did 21. I could run them all in order, but I think it would be really boring to run them all in order. And I'm back. I went to Alaska on hiatus, and we're landing, and they say, "You can turn on your phones now." Swear to God, this is the universe of Mark Burnett. And I turn on the phone when we're taxiing in at Burbank, and the phone rings. Now, I haven't seen Mark for like 3 years, and he goes, "Would you like to come back to do the scripted thing?" You don't say no to Mark Burnett, and it's too much fun to not say yes. So once again, I said, and I've got one deal point in my deal besides all the other stuff I negotiate, which is if it doesn't work out, you know, if I leave, if they fire me, if like whatever, if I get bored, I get to go back to Survivor, because I have never had as much fun. I really do owe, I mean, I guess in show business you owe everybody something, but I owe Lynn Spillman my life. I'm not going to trash you, Lynn, on this show, and I'm not going to reveal any secrets. I mean, Tom Shelley, it was amazing. Mark Burnett, I'm like the luckiest person in the world. So
no need to suck kneecaps, Ken.
Oh, believe me, I don't suck kneecaps the way they do on Survivor Oz. Have you ever listened to that? He's sucking
Ken,
the ovaries,
we're not here
and
to talk
scrotum
about Survivor Oz.
I mean, okay,
but we get it. You're a big fan of all the shows and all of the coverage that you really
no.
I've
fallen in love with Rob Has a Podcast. I have been listening to that since Nicaragua.
You not just Survivor, you listen to. Because of these podcasts, that I feel bad we made you listen to talk about Big Brother and Amazing Race and Utopia.
I've never missed an episode of Big Brother, and unfortunately I never missed an episode of Utopia. I wish I had missed them all. That was a disaster. Oh my God. Although I still think that Get, and I would like to submit a Miss Survivor write-in of Bella.
Bella?
Yeah,
yes.
Bella.
I know you wanted me to get Bella on the podcast.
And a chicken tractor. Both. So
maybe I could set you up to interview Bella as a special correspondent.
I would so do it. I would so like do the Bella Field interview, because that's the only place we'll get her, is in a field.
So. All right. So you had this scripted background, yeah. And then you fell in love with Survivor. You didn't think you were going to like it. You went to go work.
No, I never didn't think I wasn't going to like it. I love Survivor.
Yes. But when somebody initially told you about it.
Oh, the watching the show.
Yes.
Oh my God. Well, here's the deal. And I thought this from the beginning. I told Mark Burnett this, who looked at me like he always does, like I'm insane. But to me, Survivor was, I like when I was a kid, I read 10 Little Indians by Agatha Christie. I was like 9, which is a murder mystery in which all these people are brought onto an island, much, much nicer than Survivor Island, in a mansion, and they're killed off one by one. And they realize that, like, one of them is the killer. And what I thought from a narrative point of view is that Survivor is really a murder mystery. Is that we, you know, you go out there and you play the game, and there's 16 to 20 stories that are being told, and you are skillfully, because I don't think Mark likes the term reality. I know, like, it is real. It's probably the most real of the reality shows. But what it really is unscripted drama. Is that it is a drama in which, you know, they come back and they tell a story where hopefully at the end you're a little hoodwinked, you know, you're a little in the know, you're all of those kinds of things, because you've invested in the way that you do with any kind of good drama. You've invested in the characters. And so finding the people, of course, who are going to be interesting and compelling in an elimination murder mystery, and surprising and not surprising in the reveal, is to me what gives Survivor its heart. Season after season after season, the location, of course, but an island, you know, is the island, and what they twist up with the game. And the way I look at it is the game has almost had to evolve. I keep thinking that in season one, we're all like ooing and aahing at Richard Hatch, who figured out that, like, you get more people to vote with you than against you. And we're all, I mean, for those who are like, weren't there in season one, you do not understand sort of the lightning rod of fame that this show got for a guy who said, I'll get more people to vote with me than against me. And everybody was like, oh my God, he's like the villain. And I do think that the show has proven otherwise, but I've wondered over the years whether if Kelly Wigglesworth had won, if we would be as invested in Survivor, because we were coming to the table of that, like sort of going, well, the villain's not going to win. And really, he's not that much of a villain, but we're kind of like going, there's no way that this guy is going to win. Rudy's going to win this thing. We love him. He's a venerated, decorated soldier, season one, not in his reunion reappearance. But we loved that guy, and that Richard won is kind of, you know, what I think really might made everybody go, oh my God, I've got to see the next one. And then the next one, the good mom won. You know, it. So the winner is determined by the game. We've had this discussion, but I think that the game always picks the right winner, even if I don't care for who the winner is or I didn't like their game. The game always picks the winner that game merited. So
now you've gotten to work with a lot of the different Survivor players over the years. Now your niche is that you're the guy responsible for all of the Mactors on the show, right? That you find, you go through the modeling headshots and then you pick out the best looking person and then you put them on the show.
Yes,
that's your
Rob is waving a red flag in front of me because he knows I'm bullish on Mactors. You know, I have a lot to say about the Mactor thing. I first want to say, you know, and I thought this in the beginning, that if you're using Gilligan's Island as a model, I just want to remind you, Ginger Grant was there. You know, she was in the white sequins and totally inappropriate for Survivor Island. Secondly, the Mactor thing is, I think, pinned on the show more than it is accurate. I certainly think, and I'm speaking as a viewer, I'm not speaking as someone who works on the show, but this show, first of all, television is a sausage factory. I have to tell you that. You know, I don't know how many shows have run 15 years in the series area, and the fact that it comes out as fresh and remarkable season after season, which doesn't mean some seasons I personally loved, was it 27 last season?
It's last 20, season was
28. I love 28. 28 is one of my favorite seasons. I'm very proud of having been able to work on that. But it produces great seasons, and it produces good seasons, and it produces every season in between. But also, to keep a show running for a number of years, you know, for better or for worse, you have to assume that the viewership is this. There's 12 million people who watch the show every week. And some of the people ask me, I mean, I'm responding to the Mactor question in a big sort of meta answer. Mm-hmm. But, you know, people like come to me and they go, well, why don't you do Arctic Survivor? And my response is like, oh, yeah, parkas are sexy. You're going to watch 20 people in parkas freezing and huddling together in their parkas at night. I mean, Survivor takes place on a beach in bathing suits. So at some level, there is a part of the game which, you know, requires that people are attractive in their bathing suits, which is not to say that there aren't characters whose attractiveness in a bathing suit isn't a factor. But I would say that a certain degree of 20-something people are people whose game in life, and we can talk about how people play the game of Survivor in their lives, is trading on their ability to be flirtatious. That, you know, so when you say Mactors, I know what you're talking about. You're talking about, believe me, I read all the boards too. I've seen Sucks and I've seen Pygmy Island and I've seen them all, and they resent it. Usually people who are resenting it are people who are not in competition for these parts that they're resenting. Yeah. So like, you know, there is a vast group of people, a vast group of ages on the show. And what you want in every one of the people that you pick is sort of the best of that persona. We don't go in with a, you know, a cut and dried template of who people are, but we do want people to be the best of who they are. And so if you're looking for people whose game is that they get people to do things for them, you want the best version of that that you can get. We do not go to the Stella Adler Conservatory and recruit people who just got off the bus. You know, I read that kind of stuff all the mm-hmm. time. You know, somebody thinks, you know, well, you're in Hollywood. Everyone drives a Mercedes. Nobody drives a Mercedes. They're not handing them out at the door. You know, we anybody who's out there who people have said to them, you would be great on Survivor. That's what we do. Every single person who goes on Survivor has to fill out an application, has to make the video, has to be interviewed by the entire retinue of people, has to be approved by the entire group of people. It is harder than you think to find. This is another thing. Can I go all over the place?
You can go all over the place, yeah.
Okay. So this is the thing about television, too. And remember, Survivor really did kind of invent the genre. Real World was there, but that's a quasi-documentary about people who are contrived together. This is a game show, a strategy show, a show with real people playing the game. Let's put this in perspective, is that if I'm on a series that's in its 15th year, I'm getting $300,000 a week to say lines that writers who are getting, I don't know, $100,000 a week, $40,000 a week, you know, various amounts of money to write dialogue for me. A director is getting paid to stage me, move me around. A soundstage is being rented. I am plucking my imaginary person who picks up dead animal carcasses from a road in Texas and putting them on an island without a line of dialogue and giving them a game to play. I want to make sure that they're going to be exciting. The basic job to me of the casting department in terms of finding people for the show is finding people who are going to be the best version of what they are in a television show that they can possibly be. Now, I also want to use the model of series television to say sometimes there's that actor who plays the friend who, like, by the third episode disappears because that was their deal. They got signed on as a regular with an optional cutoff at a certain point, and they get replaced. When you put people on this game, you're hoping that they're all going to light the fire that obviously to get them through the 60 levels of casting that they have to get through, and I'm not kidding, it's like 60 levels to get through the casting thing, are going to hit their mark. But you can't pull them out once the game starts. So some people are better at convincing us that they're going to be great than they're capable sometimes of being great. But I would say, you know, I would say that the majority of people hit a mark for us on the show, and that it is not easy to get people who are going to be really exciting on mm-hmm. on a television show.
Well, I'm sure that of the, you know, thousands of people that are listening to this, many of them are saying, well, how come they don't put the fans on? Why aren't there more of the real fans of the show that watch us every week? Shouldn't they be on the show instead of the people? And I'm sure you hear this criticism all the time.
I hear all the criticism.
And you're one of the people, and I know we can't speak for everybody that works in casting, but you certainly are a guy who was in that room, in that conversation, and is also very acutely aware of what people are saying on the internet.
Being a fan can translate, in the case of John Cochran, in the case of Spencer, in the case of a number of people, into something really good for the game. It's a great confessional sensibility. It's a great knowledge of the lore of the game. But those people also bring something else to the table as well. John Cochran is spontaneously and unconsciously one of the funniest people I've ever talked to. John Cochran would tell a story about dating a girl in college and everybody would be on the floor. He's just funny to listen to, and he is completely a fish out of water. And he is someone whose game as a fish out of water was really interesting to watch on South Pacific. I mean, he got flipped because he was such a fish out of water and he knew that he had no position. I debate Jim Rice all the time over whether that was a wise move or not for him to flip. I would have done the same thing. If I'd have known that I could trade for a certain, everybody's promises notwithstanding, but I don't remember quite the numbers, but if I were going from number 7 with no possibility of advancement, which is what it seemed like on the tribe that he was on, to number 8 with a possibility of being able to flip a new team of people who weren't dead set against me, I would have rolled the dice on that too. Mm-hmm. Because going out 8th, maybe with a bullet, or 7th is not much different, you know, and so he took his shot. And I would say that that's the coach that was really interesting to watch. And that made for an interesting game too, was a guy who instinctively said to Cochran, I know what you need. I know what you need. You need someone to like appreciate who you are, what you bring to the table. That's, to me, I couldn't tell you. I can tell you about a couple of competitions, and I'm not denying that the challenges are fabulous. And the part of what works about Survivor is everything. Everything about Survivor works. But to me, what's exciting about the show is the stuff with the people, not when they're performing the part of Zen Master or Shoe Burner or whatever it is, with no disregard to them, but it's when the people are suddenly revealing themselves to us at both what they do really well, what they need very much, what they want very much, how it is that like their hurt translates into action in the game. That to me is why the show has run for 15 years. Now, people are going to tell me other things, and they're right too. I mean, the reason the show runs for 15 years is it works. Mm-hmm. It works for me on the character level.
Yeah. And so of the people that are the fans who, you know, desperately want to get on the show, and I know that a lot of them listen to this program and a lot of them are making their tapes and they're sending them in, or I shouldn't even say tapes, it's not tapes anymore, uploading their videos, yeah, and sending them in, you know, season after season, and they don't know what they're doing wrong. Is there something that you could personify, like that you know what they're doing wrong, or is it a sense of that there's nothing that they could do better?
I can answer sort of vaguely and specifically at the same time. You know, and this is based on the Lynn Spellman theory, which is like we look for three things, you know, sex, humor, conflict.
Yes.
Which one of those do you bring to the table? And if you bring it to the table, bring it to the table. You know, it's that simple. Is that if you are a person, and I'm not saying, look, we don't always get it, but I do want to say that, like, you know, for the past 6 seasons that I worked on the show, there were 3 of us, they're going to kill me for naming them, but Penny Lane Clifton, Caitlin Moore, and myself were the casting team on Survivor. And we are part of the same machinery. We worked really well together. I love these people like my best friends. They're ride or dies with me. The whole thing, we're pretty good. Not 100%, because this is real people. These aren't scripts. You know, we're pretty good at knowing when someone is being authentic, when people are being inauthentic. And our process, for the most part, is ferreting out authenticity from phoniness. I would much rather someone said to me, here's where I'm not good, but here's where I excel. Here's But also, in answer to your question, knowing who got pogonged on the first season isn't going to help you in the game. Mm-hmm. Knowing who came in third, and I've been there with people, you know, I know everything there is about Survivor. Ask me a question. I'll tell you who went out fourth. I'll tell you who went out first. Okay. What does that do? I had a guy, you know, who said, I'm going to sketch people. I'm a really good artist. I'm going to sketch people. And I said, and that's interesting because why? We're going to watch the, and he said, well, you know, because I'll
it wasn't
develop.
Eric Reichenbach, was it?
No. I can't name names. Right. I'm just, yes. you know, I'm just going to sketch people and they're going to reveal things to me. And I said, now there, I can see it. Day three, the beard starts to come in, you know? And so, you know, the person called the person who'd said you should be on Survivor and screamed that I was an asshole, you know, that I was like mm-hmm. busting their chops. Well, of course I'm going to bust your chops. My job is to bust your chops. If you can't survive an interview with me, forget the jock itch.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm really, and I think Spencer will probably tell you, I'm an asshole on the phone. I'm a much nicer person in real life. Well, I'm not. I'm really not a nice person, which is probably why I like the job so much. But my job is to get you to fold like a house of cards. Because if we can find a hole in your armor, then like you should be on the sofa watching the show. You have to be really resilient. And I also think that like we're looking for people who give good confessional commentators, people who can talk about the game. That Cochran, you know, again, I'm using examples. You know, Cochran is the best commentator in the world. You know, when you look at Heroes versus Villains, you don't waste a confessional. There's not a wasted confessional there. That was like we've said, look at an episode of Heroes versus Villains if you want to see what's going on this show. You know, those people, they're great prototypes for the show, but they're also great at confessional. Survivor, what differentiates it from a sporting event, you know, from I'm blanking on the name of Mark's show, the race
Eco Challenge.
What separates it from Eco Challenge is the people are talking to you about the game, is that they're telling us at home something that they may not be able to tell the people who they're playing the game with. So if you're, I'm making this up, but if your game is that you're the person who's going to sit and like do nothing on the show, then you better compensate for that. Not that sitting and doing nothing on the show is anything that's ever likely to get cast, but your confessional better be completely different than the person who does nothing. You'd better be the snarky person whose snarks are so good that we're willing to say, well, you know, they're not going to be like competition beasts and they're going to sit, but we're going to be really interested when a dialogue is happening and they're stirring. Now, I'm making this up because people who tell us that they're going to sit and do nothing on the show are probably not people who are interested in mm-hmm. having on the show. But it's, you know, we're looking, you know, people in the same way that people say, I'm a huge fan of the show and therefore I should be on the show. A lot of people go, I can build a fire with two sticks. Why aren't I on the show? Well, that was season one. You know, if you look at season one with the chest of money and the voting people out, you know, by the majority, it has changed. And I will say I'm biased, but I think that like for the most part, Survivor's changes, although they're hated by the purists, if you went back to season one game, which is just 20 people, two tribes, one merge, no swap, no idols, nothing like that, we would not have an audience. The show is about outsmarting what we throw at you. And sometimes we throw medallions of power, which aren't the best choice in the world to throw. But we're trying to mix it and you up if you're playing the game. Predictability is the enemy of this show. And everybody talks about pogonging now. The first, you know, aside from All Stars, and I'm sorry, Rob, I would have kept you. But
thank you, Ken.
Yes. But the Philippines season, whatever, I think it was 24, 25. Was great because of the three tribes. Like suddenly you couldn't build a majority of four. That was great. Blood versus water too with the loved one. You know, mixing it up, keeping it from being, oh, I know what's going to happen. I know who's going to vote people out. I was very surprised that we had a surprise blindside this week on Blood versus Water too. Mm-hmm. You know, is the game is best when it's reinventing itself.
So many different things that you touched on there. Do you think that one of the reasons why this season in particular, that people haven't really fallen in love with any of these characters. And I'm sure there's some people that are really loving some of these characters, but that nobody this season is really giving us good confessional.
You know, I'm not dodging a bullet. I didn't cast this season. I know that Blood versus Water the first time was much more difficult to cast than you would think. This is my own theory about casting, Blood versus casting teams, which I now have a lot more respect for The Amazing Race as well, which is also cast by Lynn. If I have someone who is like loud and boisterous and a narrator, generally the family has been that person's audience. So finding the person who matches that energy in the same family is a really difficult thing to do. And I know we had some of those problems in Blood versus Water. I'm one of those people. I was surprised that Blood versus Water was as good as it was because it was so hard to find survivors with family that were as dynamic, you know, as the people were. And it was a really, really interesting experiment. I will say that in Blood versus Water, one of the things that I feel as a viewer on Survivor is I miss the opening crawl of characters. It is so nice to know names.
Yeah.
It is so nice to know what teams they're on. And it becomes kind of a ritual that week after week, if you've forgotten their name at the beginning of the show, you know who they are. One of the things that you get with couples, with pairs, they're not all couples, is you do get a dynamic no matter what. And so at some level, there's a little going into it. You go, okay, they're engaged, you know, they're brothers, they're this, they're that. So you have that going into it. But it just shows that it is a really difficult task to cast the show. And frequently things come at us from production. I have to tell you, casting is an integral part of the show, but it's a part of the show. It is a huge effort. I got to take the loved ones out on the Karamoan season.
Okay.
And I got to see the show from the ground up. And I used to say with absolute integrity to people who would say, like, you know, have you been? I would say, you have to kill me to get me to play the show. But unfortunately, the deck stacked that they needed someone and I agreed to go. I'm really glad I went. But it is the hugest operation you have ever seen. And casting is a piece of it. And casting is a piece of it also, which happens here on the mainland. That location is the most active thing I have ever. It is amazing to pull up to Survive. First of all, it takes 30 hours to get there. They're not kidding when it's a remote thing. It's not just flying to Manila and stopping in Samoa for 2 hours. It's boat ride and plane ride and boat ride. You've done it.
Yeah.
It's like when they say remote, they mean remote. And you go out there and you see like military and helicopters circling around and like an island which is closed off. And they are protective of the integrity of the game like you cannot believe. You know, the relatives are not allowed on the island except for the stunt. They are kept away from it. I mean, there is no looky-looing going on there. That game is the real deal, and it is amazing. And casting is a piece of the puzzle. Those challenges, the art direction, which has now been, you know, transparent from the TV guide stuff, it is amazing what they do to put this show together. So we are a piece of it, and sometimes they say, let's do this as a theme, or sometimes we say to them, here are some theme ideas. We are part of a band which marches in a very, very precise, like I say, television is a large sausage factory. We have our place on it and we are proud to be part of it. We work really hard to assemble our part, but we are part of a mechanism which I think is in amazing good shape. I would love to like be alive for Survivor 60, and I have a feeling that the one who is least likely to be here is me on Survivor 60, you know, because I think that the show is an amazing warhorse. It is an amazing. I'm such a geek because I'm in Los Angeles, where like you, I should have a shirt that says Game of Thrones. But I wear my Survivor shirt and hat to the gym every day. I love working on the show. I really do. I'm just so proud to be a part of that organization.
Yeah. Well, I always felt like that you are such a good like steward of being part of the franchise of like, you know, it's so nice to have. I think that for fans to know that, you know, you are such a big fan of the show and working on the show. And I don't think that you're alone.
There are editors who have been with the show for the 30 seasons. I mean, people are really proud to be a part of that show. It makes me all verklempt. You know, it does, because it's like I'm telling you, my first season there, they were broadcasting Vanuatu while we were casting Guatemala. And I used to go to casting meetings and they would go, "This is the episode where Janu quits." And I'd go, "No, you're spoiling it." And like, they finally said, "You can't be a fan here anymore. You know, if you're working on the show, you really have to work on the show." And there is a separation. I mean, I'm enjoying watching the season because I don't know anything about it. I don't know these players at all. You know, I don't know the dynamics. I am totally watching the show, and I can't fall more in love with something that I'm in love with, but I'm appreciating it as a viewer who just like gets off on the show.
Is there one person this season that's your favorite person cast? Is there anybody that you say like, that's whether they're in the game or not in the game, but is there one person that you really said that was Ken Raskoff thumbs up?
Well, the casting department gets my thumbs up no matter what.
Always.
Because I know the tasks that they have to do. I want to talk about Winner's Edit to you and Steven, because the two Winner's Edits have both been voted off in the past 2 weeks, because I don't believe in a Winner's Edit. I believe in Agatha Christie. I believe that our job is to let you believe that someone is going to win. And I there's a lot of J's this season, but who got voted off this week? Jeremy. Jeremy was great. Jeremy was a fabulous piece of casting. He's all the things that you want, including not completely predictable. He didn't play by a rule book. Sometimes his impatience got the better of him, but he was smart. He was sussing it out. He was reactive. He was proactive. He was all those kinds of things. I'm so upset. And I got to tell you that, that Muffin is doing a pretty good job.
Muffin.
You know, Muffin, she's like, you know, she's in a sticky situation, and she's like one of those, she's a Sandra. She's got like a lot of,
really?
Well, yes. I mean, she's manifesting a lot of stuff without ever manifesting it. And, do I like her? Would I want to have dinner with her? No. But I like her on the show because she's a pageant mom. She is, she is like a different take on the Holly Hoffman. She is like, you know, Holly, I love me some Holly Hoffman. I do. But Holly is Holly's another one where you would speak to her and you would say, this woman is either going to be like Lady Macbeth all the way through this thing, or she's going to have a breakdown. And the excitement of the show is that you're casting someone who has both potentials. And in Holly Hoffman's case, both happened. I mean, bonanza, bingo, you know, I mean, you know, I sent your shoes out to sea. I mean, there was a broken woman, you know, I mean, and like by the end, she was like pirate mom. She was like, they had to get rid of her because she was so good. She became like a tough broad. This Muffin is like unbelievably Machiavellian in the best possible way.
Yeah.
So she's like good. You began with a preface that like there's disappointment in the casting. I think that like the good news is the end game is much more exciting. Yeah. It actually sagged a little in the middle for me.
Actually, if I could drill down on what I'm saying, is that I don't know if anybody is giving us good confessional this season. I don't know if everything that happened happened exactly the same.
God,
but
is
somebody,
it Josh or Jeremy who got voted off the week before?
Josh.
This? He was giving good confessional.
Yeah.
He was giving pretty good confessional. Yeah, I would say it's like tough. It's the problem of casting relationships and casting confessional. I think that they're telling some really good. I find that the storytelling this season is much more week by week than it is like the whole season arc. And it's been different and it's been interesting. And they've certainly told you the story every week. There's been a lot of misdirection, you know, and I have no idea what that says. I wasn't there when they shot it. I was busy with my scripted stuff, you know, I feel like tactily like removed from it. I'm enjoying watching the show. I am. You're never going to make like an unfan of me out of the show. The way to make an unfan of me of the show, which is a terrible word, unfan, but you know, is to like fake it, is to create inauthentic situations. And what I love about the show is like you never know what you're gonna get. And even in like seasons that I haven't loved, there are moments that make it worthwhile. I think it was Thailand, which was a really Which is the one where they had the first pecking order challenge?
Yeah, well, that was in Marchesis.
Where Nurse John got voted out because of a challenge that revealed that, like, he didn't care for the people he'd been stroking so well. Because, it wasn't my favorite season, Marchesis. Was I thrilled that Vesepia was the winner? No. But she was the winner. So the game produced the right winner for that season.
But what
season.
Bothered you about that? Was it that they did a challenge that made them reveal the...
No, I love that.
Oh, okay.
That was my favorite thing in the world about that season.
So you just didn't love the characters?
Yeah, I felt that, like, maybe at that point, like, they needed to start looking for, like, inventions of immunity idols and outcasts and things like that, which followed... probably very shortly thereafter, because I felt like I knew how the game was starting to format itself. I enjoyed the game. There are images that I will never forget. That girl, Sarah, riding in like Cleopatra, Rob Mariano for the first season being like, the evolution of Rob has been really interesting on the show, although he will always be the Rob who sucks to me, and you will always...
How dare you, Ken?
You will always be the Rob who doesn't suck to me.
I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
How dare I? How dare I take away your moniker?
I'll have you put your right hand on the BR
rules.
No,
you're my favorite Rob who's ever played the game. There is no question about that. So,
better than Skater Rob?
Well, I did like him strangling Clay. I mean, that was like a great moment. I think it was the early days of GIFs, and I saw a lot of Clay's eyes popping out. I mean, I'm not for violence, but in the early days of GIFs and the internet, it was a great moment.
Yes. All right. So many different things. I want to make sure we cover everything. All right, just of the seasons that you worked on, who are some of your favorite characters, no matter how they did on the show, just in terms of characters that you've got to interact with?
Well, first,
and I don't want to say maybe not favorite, but who are some people that were really fun for you to work with?
It is really hard to parse them, partly because... we all have relationships with them by the time it's over with, because we spend a lot of time. Like I say, there's 60 levels of hell to get onto the show, and we're all doing at least 47 of those levels. Some of us do all 60, but we're all doing, a lot of levels of that. And so you do come to really like the people. And sometimes I don't believe in the edit, people saying I got a good or a bad edit. They're pretty much who they are on the show, edited down only to tell the story that works, but if they didn't do it, it doesn't happen on the show. I can be more specific if you can be more specific. I can't pull the wheat from the chaff on that.
So maybe as we go through, I'm sure that different things will come up. As far as the actual casting process, when people are sending in videos, does one person watch all of the videos? Do you guys in a team split them up? How did in the Willy Wonka factory, which is casting, the videos come in and what happens?
First of all, like I say, by the time that the three of us had finished our seasons together, the factory, I was the best anvil presser, Penny was the best bell ringer, Caitlin was the best whistleblower. So we all had our thing, but we start out with sort of a territorial divide, which is vague, where we sort of split the country. I certainly was Mr. Midwest. If they talked like they were in Fargo, they probably had some interaction with me somewhere on there. And then I sort of started picking up the southern states, and somebody else had the eastern seaboard, somebody else had the western. But by the time the season is over, we all start sort of, generating. But I will say this, and nobody believes it, and I don't care. We look at everything that comes in. We look at everything that comes in. We know the pool of applicants. The first season I was there, when people were submitting on VCR, we had a courtyard at the old offices, and FedEx used to come in. We had eight PAs who would just open the packages, staple them appropriately, attach them to the videos. We watched everything that came in, and they filled the courtyard of this building with tens of thousands. I don't do it's still in the it's still thousands and thousands and thousands of applicants that every single one gets looked at. And if there is a reason, that we believe that someone is worth calling, we try to make that call. Mm-hmm. Now, people can tank on hello.
Yeah.
people can tank, you know, on the first question. And we, you know, there are certain things that we say to people that are absolutely true. Survivor is the worst boyfriend you have ever met. We will court you. We will make you feel special. We will do all kinds of things, and we will leave you at the curb wondering what you did wrong. It is a game show. And from the point of view of the applicant, you have to put your heart and soul into the application and move on with your lives. And I say this to people who've played the game as well, is that it is a strange sort of process, which has to do with our needs, with our themes, with our seasons and stuff like that. We look with very specific eyes for very, very specific things. If you got to play the game, go home and be happy and go back to picking up the roadkill, you know, or whatever it is that you are doing. But it doesn't work that way, you know, and I understand it. Like you know, if you're not making the sausage and you are instead someone who is invited to our meat fest, it is a very exhilarating and heady experience. And I get it. Mm-hmm. I totally get it. It doesn't make it any easier. We still only are going to put 16 people on the island, 16 to 20 people on the island, or I guess 8 to 10 people sometimes, you know,
right.
it doesn't matter. And we are looking for people who we think fit the game that we are casting the best. It is a dice roll. And the best thing you can do is maximize your odds at the table, but understand it's a casino. You know, I like to say you want to go to a bar and you either want to sit and have a drink with someone or you want to throw a drink at someone. And anybody who is just someone who's like sitting at the table with you to have the drink is not really what you want to see on a television show. And that doesn't mean, by the way, that you want to go. People always say, I'm going to play the part of a villain on this show. Forget it. Mm-hmm. Forget it. You cannot play the part of a villain. You are who you are. The job of reality casting is find people who take complete ownership of who they are. We know people are making things up. We know that they've read books, that they've gone to classes, that they have done stuff. We get it. It's not going to help you get on the show. Own yourself. Own what it is that I would own my assets. I would own my liabilities. I would look at confessionals and find out, like, you know, what makes people interesting. You can't be Tony Vlachos's confessional. Only Tony can be Tony Vlachos's confessional. Only
look, Ken. Yeah. No, but there's only one Tony. Bring me back.
Ring the bell because yes. I love the imitations, even though they're bad. I love them. There's only one person who can do that. Like, learn how to tell. If you're not a storyteller, you're not right for this show. You know, I had a guy who it goes down to everything. We look for consistency. If you send me your driver's license picture or your passport picture, I'm not thinking very much of you. And I'm going to know if you're making bug eyes at me too. Send me a picture. Everything that you do, if you're going to take your one spin at the wheel, don't you want to maximize your odds at it? Send me a picture, which like says irrefutably, this is who I am. Send me an application which every word on it says, this is who I am. Mm-hmm. We look at these things. We send me a tape, which, you know, I'm telling you, my first season, it doesn't happen as much anymore. Do you know how many naked angels in the snow I saw? How many people who really shouldn't have been naked on a videotape flailing around in the snow making angels I got? Now I say to myself, okay, so it's ice cold and your nipples are hard. And except for that, like, what the hell are you doing with your maximum of 3 minutes? What are you doing? Mm-hmm. I've had more people lip syncing I Will Survive or I'm a Survivor or whatever it is. I've had people have their children tell me why I should pick them, occasionally never seeing the person in. If you can give me 2.5 minutes, if you can't fill 2.5 minutes with being exciting, with being like someone who I want to get to know better, save your postage, I guess we don't do postage anymore. Save your electrons. Save your upload time. You know,
your bandwidth.
Don't bother. We know if you're completely edited and soundtracked, it's all great. It's all great. We love you as a movie maker. Unfortunately, On the Lot only lasted one season. We don't want to see your On the Lot audition. We don't want to see your filmmaking technique. We want to see you talk about how you have turned lemons into lemonade. We want to know how you play the game every day of your life. You can say to me, how did you get your first job? And I can say, well, I applied and they called me and I went in for an interview and I was really good. Or you can say, I went to personnel and I said, you've never had a boy secretary at NBC and I don't care. You got to start someplace. I'm going to be the first boy secretary and I'm going to be promoted. And they say, you're not going to get promoted. And I say, you haven't met me yet.
Yeah.
That's my version of me as a better interview. And by the way, you have to be able to just say it. If you're straining, if you're struggling between words for it, I'm going to hear it. It's not good confessional. We want you to be able to talk to us. We want you to play the game that you want to play. We want to hear about it. If you're a fan, then emphasize your strategic sensibility. If you're a fan, knowing that you know who got voted out when isn't as interesting as saying, I'm going to borrow from Spencer because like what he did really, really well was X, Y. I'm not going to give you the answers because I'll know that you got my answers.
Yes.
And so will the people who are still in their screening. I mean, we're looking for authenticity. And if you're, I'm going to say, in response to your Mactor, your hypothetical Mactor, there are people who you walk into a room and you gravitate towards them. And it's not the hot girl necessarily, at this imaginary bar that I guess that we all hang out at. And we
Survivor
just say,
bar.
Yeah, the Survivor bar where we go, you're, it's the person who like you can't not look at. It's the person who people turn their heads when they walk into a room at the bar, and people, it's not that they buy them drinks, it's that they're fascinating, that like you want to watch them. I don't do bars, but I've done enough time in bars to know those people from just the hot person. It's the person. I'm Parvati, and again, it took Parvati a second season to master it, but I've met Parvati once. I wasn't involved in those seasons, but she makes you feel like you matter, that you are like the person who she wants to stare at and talk to. And it doesn't matter if you're a man, if you're a woman, if you're gay or straight, she makes you feel, and she'll kill you while she does it. She will get your necklace.
She's charming. I mean, that's really what it comes to.
She's beyond charming.
Yeah.
And by the way, Mark Burnett has that too. Mark Burnett, you can't not pay attention to. He's the most compelling human being in the world. And you don't rehearse that. You are or you aren't.
Yeah.
And it's like you can't be Parvati if you're not. What you can be is you if you are. And you have to be willing to own it. But it is not, I get it. It's Peter Pan. It's a camp. You couldn't pay me to take the families out again. It's like horrible. It is so hot there.
You were responsible for such a great moment in Survivor history of Dawn taking her teeth out at the final tribal council. That was inadvertently because of you bringing those family members out there to Karamoan.
Yeah. sure.
If it wasn't for you, that would have never happened.
Yeah, I didn't think of it like that. I am the butterfly effect. It's really nice to know that. No, but I mean, like, again, Dawn, who knew? And yet you knew with Dawn that like, here's this woman who like wants to be a mother for people. And at a moment she has a need too. It's like a perfect mom moment. That's like what you want. That's real people. And you don't know how it's going to manifest yourself. You don't know that what's his name with the alligator shoes is like going to
Dan Lembo.
I'm sorry. Is this mandatory? You don't know that like that's like going to set Holly Hoffman free, but it does. She achieves her apogee in the arc of who she is. Because that's what Survivor is. Survivor is a mutating snowflake of possibility when people are out there being assholes. You know, who takes alligator shoes to like Nicaragua? Only a guy who doesn't care. But, it's like,
I'm going to send a tweet to you about this.
I'm going to tweet on this.
Okay. It's really, really interesting. Just the idea of the survivor fish tank of like, you don't really know what's going to happen. But you're going to find the most interesting fish.
No, it's alchemy. Yeah. And that's the brilliance of the show is like you basically put these 20 tropical fish in a tank and like somehow or another, one person is going to devour them all. That's the murder mystery. That is Agatha Christie. It's fabulous.
Yeah. So I get from a lot of people over the course of the years of doing the podcast, people are always like, will you look at my tape? Will you look at my video? And I really, you know, I don't spend a lot of time on this. Like a couple of years ago, I was like helping people more with this, but yeah, this is not enough time.
I want you to know, cause I was listening at the time when you said that you were going to like look at people's tapes.
Yes.
I went, oh boy, this will be fun. Cause you do burn out.
Yeah.
It is like, I'm telling you, for the first 2-3 weeks we're just like clicking after clicking after clicking. It is like, you know, there are harder jobs in the world. Digging ditches is hard work.
Roadkill
is hard work, you know. It's true, but looking at tapes of people, and that's, but the other thing is, on the other hand, in this sea of like of constancy, there are tapes that pop,
yeah,
and you just kind of like go, oh my God, you know, oh my God. And we still have miles to go before we sleep because a tape, you know, obviously we're looking to see how much of the tape is fake. That's, you know, when you get to the phone interviews, but the tape and the application, I'm not kidding about the application either. We look at your answers to questions. We do. We want to know what you think. If you're guarded with us, if the application or the tape feels like you're holding back, then you're not going to be uncensored on the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's the point? Why are you applying for a show where cameras on? What are we getting from it? You know, we know what you're getting. You're going to get to play this game, which you'd have to kill. You're going to get parasites, people. You know, you're going to get all kinds of things that you don't want, but you want to play it. What are we getting? What are we giving our 12 million viewers that's going to like make them want to watch you be one of the devourers or the devourees?
So the advice that I would give people is that, you know, this is an exercise in branding and understanding branding and who you are. Is that a fair thing to say?
The only thing that I would say that I would urge people, you don't have to believe it, but it will affect you. You can't invent yourself. You're not going to reinvent yourself for the show. We're smarter than that. By the time you go through all of the processes, by the time that like we're down to like, you know, the nitty and the gritty, and it's us and CBS having discussions about who's going to do it. Forget it. You can't pretend to be what you're not.
And I'm not saying to pretend, but what I'm saying is to figure out what your character
is. Own your shit. And, I'm sorry. Can I say that?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
And then, you know, figure out, you know, what everything looks like through that prism of this is who I am. Like, oh, like, you know, because I don't know if everybody knows who they are as a character.
But if you don't know, first of all, we don't like to talk about people as characters.
Okay.
Because they're not playing a role. They are not characters. They are not the agent on CSI. They are who they are, willing to be who they are in this game show, and not worried about how they're going to look, how they're going to come off, any of that kind of stuff. If you're guarded about who you are, then we're not going to get a version of you that we're going to be able to tell the story with. Mm-hmm. We're going to get the version that you think you're going to control. You're not going to control it. You're 39 days out there. I've not played the game, but I've talked to a lot of people who have, you know, you're a zombie out there. And so like pulling your wits together the best you can is like having wits that you're going to pull together in the first place, knowing who you are. You know, people always say, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. You're not. You're going to be hungry. You're going to be tired. You're going to be cold, amazingly. You know, you're going to be all of these kinds of things. And to be able to pull something out of your hat is not as possible as it is to take ownership of who you are. When I say to people all the time, sleep outside for a night, take a shower, go swimming, sleep on your balcony in Arizona, whatever it is, you know, document that. Tell me how it went, you know, because they think it's so easy on television. It doesn't smell. It's like not hot. It's not sweaty.
Wet. That's the worst part. The wet.
Wet. believe me, yeah. I am pointing to the part of my thighs that everybody like has problems with where it gets wet.
Yes.
You know, I don't even want to think about jock itch, you know, it's like, or foot itch or things like that. I've seen Katie Collins' toes, you know, it's horrible.
Yeah. So would you rather see a video that's highly produced, or would you rather see somebody just turn the camera on and just, you know,
at the end of the day, that's a no brainer. If I can't like enjoy you talking, everything else is filigree. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
If I can't sit and have a conversation with you that I feel I'm going to want to lean into my chair, have another drink with you, forget it. Edit to your heart's delight and enter a filmmaking competition, or be a real housewife if you can figure that out. You know, but if you want to play Survivor, you have to talk to me.
Yeah. Because I feel like of the casting tapes that are like available, like on YouTube, the ones that are like the, like, okay, look at the, like, you know, Shane Powers or like Eric Reichenbach or all those, like, those are some of the ones that are really, lots of cutaways, lots of shots, lots of music. And I feel like a lot of people try to emulate that.
Yeah.
But I don't know if there's a great example of somebody just talking to camera that people can look at.
I don't know, because I have nothing to do with what goes on the internet and what doesn't, mm-hmm. and what casting chooses to share with people or not. I can say that for the seasons that I have cast, the most important consequential part of the video is the confessional part, and that you can go wherever you want to. I get it. Fast cut, you're an athlete. Fast cut, you're funny. But we know filmmaking. And at some point, if like we need to sell you by showing you running outdoors, we will take care of that down the line. What we can't take care of is your personality.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot create a personality if one doesn't exist in the first place. We don't create personality in the second place. There is no second place.
So do you guys still bring the people out to LA in the final step?
Yes, I can say that because we do. We bring people out for the final step. We, on my first season, we went around the country. I don't understand, because I am an assemblyman on the Sausage Factory. I'm not like a manager of the Sausage Factory. It seemed to me that it made sense, but apparently it doesn't make as much sense as it does to just like kind of, you know, deal with people on the phone. We Skype people, we do all of that kind of stuff. But we used to go out in the field and meet people and then invite them out to the finals. The only thing we don't do is go out into the road. And
yeah.
I guess the reason is because with technology being what it is, it's so, what do you need to go into the field for? You know, people are going to be interesting right there. You're going to talk to them, you know, you're going to do all of the stuff. We are seasoned veterans of the show. We're pretty good, for better or for worse, we're still there. And pretty good at figuring out like who's, you know, the one thing that I'm not going to get in trouble for saying is we look for authenticity, and the entire process is to find authentic people to play the game. You know, go ahead, ask me about John Rocker and Lisa Welchel, and because people ask me about that.
Sure.
I'm going to do frequently asked questions of me.
Great.
We don't get more money if someone we are involved with wins. We try to cast 16 people who are going to win the show.
But you do have people that you are sort of like, I'm not sure what the right word would be, but like, are they considered like your people? Do you have ownership of certain people through the casting process?
Lynn Spillman has ownership of the entire casting process, and the rest of us are pleased to be a part of that.
But are you in the room fighting for the person that you've been
for
talking
sure.
to?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And like, I'm telling you, kneecaps and higher have been offered to be sucked in this. It won't help you. It will not help you in this
yeah.
thing. I've seen people's pictures on M&Ms. We will eat them.
Yes.
It won't help you. It will not help you. You will dissolve in our mouth long before we remember who you are.
Mm-hmm.
I have had baked goods sent. I have had strange, like, calligraphed booklets written
yeah.
with people's applications. I have had all kinds of things come to me. That's not what we're casting. We're not casting your baking skills. We're eating your baking skills and like going off to lunch and saving money that day. But you know, or having an ulcer or whatever it is. The only way, you know, so you don't have to suck up to the person. Just be yourself. I'll tell you things that like have set me free. You know, I am very, I was known as like a real hard ass. You know, I would say to people, you are call me during business times. Do not call me outside of business times. The only time you are getting my cell phone number, which you're promptly going to lose, is at finals. But I had someone who called me 3 times a day. We have caller ID. I rolled her to voicemail. I said, please stop it. Please stop it. I finally, my colleagues hate me because I picked up the phone once and I said, you're dead to me. You are dead to me. We have a day job. I've had people, because I'm an open book in my life. I've had people show up at a restaurant that I frequent and go, mm-hmm. Oh my God, you eat here too. And I'm like going, really? Are you really like pretending that like I'm eating here too? I've read my Facebook. I know where I eat. I mean, bless your heart. It's not going to help you. It's not going to help you. What's going to help you is being great. That will help you a lot.
Well, I know that I've seen you post on Facebook before that it annoys you when people from the casting process, you know, want to be friends with you on Facebook, for instance, because they feel like that's another, you know.
I still maintain it, although I never use it. I have a Facebook account, Ken R, A-R-E. You can't get in there because it's sealed or whatever it is, you know, and I make people who I'm talking to become part of my Facebook account. They can't see each other. That way I get to look at them. I get to talk to them. I get to write them. I get to have like an open communication with them. My Ken Raskoff account, I don't think it's blocked from the world. I don't do Survivor business. I'm a guy on Facebook. I, for some reason, I want to share with you what I had for breakfast. I don't know. There's something wrong with me. That's what you do on Facebook. You know, I want to say stupid things. I want to rant about the politics of the day. Stay off my Facebook. I'm like, leave me alone. Leave me alone, you dumb kids, or I'll shoot your cat.
Yeah.
I just don't understand it. You won't advance yourself. And part of the problem is we create very real relationships with the people who are in the process with us, but we cash a check. I mean, we do this for a living. And, you know, my goal in creating relationships with people is to help them maximize if I think that there is something that they can maximize. It's not to be their personal friend. And I like the people. It's not that I don't like them. It's like a weird kind of thing. And I get emails. I get 3 a day, you know, which is probably nothing compared to some of the other people, you know, saying, hey, will you look at my tape? No, I'm on Facebook telling people about my French fries. Leave me alone.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's right. Like, stop it.
So I think that's an interesting discussion, because not just for the people that are trying to get on the show for the first time, but I'm sure there's many, many people who have already been out there the one time and sometimes in some cases 2 or 3 times and want to go back. And so that is there like a point, like, is it, would you say the rule is like, don't call us. We'll call you. Is there,
I can't. The rule is the applications are open to everyone and you're free to apply. We try to like keep you there. There are people, I mean, I'll tell you, there are people who apply 9 times. They, you know, it's not the most sophisticated system in the world. Yeah. You can go to another IP or whatever it is, or another internet address, and you can send it. We know who you are. You know, it's like, if it doesn't work the first time, it's not going to work on the 8th time. And if it does work on the first time, it will work on the first time. We know what we're doing. By the same token, we know who's been to finals. We know who's been to finals. We can't stop you from reapplying. You're welcome to reapply. We're going to look at it. We're going to go, oh, that person who was out at finals last time, and stop looking at the tape. Mm-hmm. So you can do what you want. You know, Survivor is great because it's democratic. I mean, the game is democratic. So do what you want. But we look at, you don't get the A because you keep applying. You get the A because you're really good.
Now, what about somebody like Troyzan, who that is the, like, oh, he applied 21 times before he finally got on the show. Like, what's the difference in a case like that where somebody just kept applying and then ultimately got on the show versus somebody who's applied 10 times and then you say, oh, this guy again?
Well, Troyzan came out and didn't make the game. He may have kept applying, but we knew who he was. So it's like, you know, chicken or egg kind of syndrome. He would have been cast if he'd have sent 0 tapes in.
Yeah.
And I know people like say to me, well, you know, I'm going to apply every year. have at it. Go for it. I will say Troy Zan has, you know, he's a photographer, the most beautiful tapes you've ever seen. And he's got like gorgeous models, you know, endorsing him and stuff like that. But that didn't help him get on the game. We know photography. We know models. Troy Zan lives on a monkey ranch. You know, he lives outdoors. You know, I love you, Troy. He's a little nuts.
Yeah.
You know, he's a little nuts. He's like, he's athletic. He's a little, self-assured. He's a wild man. He's a balls out, stop at nothing kind of person. He's a little eccentric. He's Troy Zan. He is absolutely who he is.
His name is Troy Zan.
Yes, it is. And like one year he didn't apply, you know, and I like kind of missed it. And he wrote me and he said, I didn't apply because one of my monkeys died and I was in mourning. I mean, he's Troy Zan.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I love you, Troy. I spent a lot of time with your family in New York. You're all great, but you're a little nuts and you know it. So,
yeah. But those are the best people, right?
Well, he's the best Troy Zan because he's nuts and he lives on a monkey ranch.
Yeah.
He wouldn't have been great if he was like an airplane pilot. I wouldn't have wanted to be in the plane. Well, I mean,
but he still would have been good TV if he was an airplane pilot who was nuts.
Well, he wouldn't be. Something would be wrong. I would disconnect with that. I would really worry if that was the voice coming over on my cockpit. I think Troy Zan is well suited.
Well, so yeah. If you take a look over on the right hand side,
this is my plane.
This is my island down there. Anyways, all right. So you get the people. You go through casting. You're fighting in the room for your people. Ultimately, they're gonna make their decision. Okay, so now you have a cast that's locked. Okay, so at what point is there preparation going on with these people that have been picked out? These people that are selected to go. It's the cast of Survivor 31. Robs versus Johns. Everybody. Or that's a bad example because that's an all star season.
Right. Of course.
Okay. So it's
and even you would have a place on it. Maybe.
So, let's not get carried away, Ken. But anyway, so whatever. So it's Survivor 31. And so how much, like, do they give them DVDs? Do they give them seasons?
I don't have a lot to do. Once we finish finals, they get turned over to a process, they get turned over to a different process, which is production. Casting is actually part of pre-production. And so when production gets going, the people who are elected to be on the show deal outside of the casting department. We encourage them, to know the game, you know, but it's up to them. I will say that, if I talk to people after the casting process and they say to me, I'm doing X, Y, and Z, I say, oh, I would never encourage or discourage them from doing whatever it is that's going to make them do what they're doing on the island. I'm eating all carbohydrates. I'm completely dieting. I'm not working out because I need to like conserve my body weight. Okay, great. Do what you want to do. And sometimes I like make the circle to my head when I like hear some of the stuff that they're doing, but I go, okay, great. So they're going to fabulously burn out or they're not going to burn out. You'd have to kill me to play the show. I think they're crazy.
Do you feel like you have a sense of what's the best idea to do before the game in terms?
No, I don't have a clue. I think the best idea is to know the game. I think it's like best to, gosh, if I were playing the game, if I were sedated and drugged, I had this fantasy the first season I was there that like I was so great that they would club me over the head and I would wake up on an island. But if it were me, I would go to an improv class. I would. Not to become an actor, but to like learn to like deal with situations. I think that like I would play a lot of poker personally because my game, if I survived to the merge, which I would never do because they would vote me out because I suck at all things physical. Mm-hmm. But if I survived to the merge, I would be fine because I'm a really good people mover person. So I would know that if I were applying, my game would depend on something to get me to the merge. Mm-hmm. Because like I would have to like figure out how it is like to get them to paint the fence for me, you know, so that like I didn't look like the person who was such a liability in the challenges. So again, I would have to figure out my game to play. That doesn't mean that somebody else shouldn't your game? What was your game, Rob?
I think it's very similar to what you're describing, yeah. Ken. I mean, I think I was lucky that I was on a season which was men versus women, yeah. which sort of minimized the need for me to be a challenge performer in the early parts of the game. So we had nothing but brute strength. So it didn't necessarily make sense to say, let's vote out the weakest person so we could maximize our strength. That ended up sort of in some ways not playing to my advantage in the All-Stars, where for a variety of reasons, but you know, you could argue that I was the weakest member of the I'm sure it didn't help that I wasn't like somebody that was helping us win challenges in the time that we ended up going to Tribal Council in that season. So I feel like I'm another person that I feel like if I was on a season and I made it to the merge, like I'm probably, you know, final four, final five, like, you know, write it down. But if there's also a great chance I'm out before the merge in many seasons.
Yeah, there is not a chance that I'm out before the merge. There is a certainty that I'm out before the merge. I could win the game if we were playing at a hotel. I mm-hmm. could so win the game, you know, but I cannot win the game on an island with Jock Itch. I won't do it.
Ken, this is the third time you brought up Jock Itch in this conversation.
It's a great leveler to me.
Is there anybody that you can think of that was drastically different than what you thought in casting and then what they turned out on the island, whether it's somebody that you thought is going to be fantastic and turned out to be flat on the island, or somebody that you thought might be flat and then was amazing on the island?
I'm not going to disparage anyone as a disappointment. I mean, people are frequently more than what you expected them to be. They're frequently less than what you expected to be. Tony, of course, who I think is probably one of the best players to ever play and win the game, you know, surprised me because, like, he was kind of quiet in my experience with him. I had a really interesting thing with him where I was saying to him, so who are we going to bring out for your loved one? And he said, I don't know, because his wife was pregnant, or I think his wife was pregnant. And he said, a friend of mine. And I said, well, who's your family person that you love the most? And he said, oh, my nanny, my grandma, like that. And he got really soft when he said my nanny. And I said, well, we're going to bring her. And he said, you can't bring my nanny. She'll ruin my game. I said, no, we're going to say, Tony, how are you? Right off the plane with the little scarf around her head and the cloth coat in the Philippines or wherever we're going to. Yeah. And you're going to weep like a baby, like a baby. He said, you can't do that. That will ruin my game. Which is when I knew, because I hadn't worked as closely with Tony. I said, oh, he's going to be so much fun because he's like really kind of, he's got like this soft spot and he's guarding against it. And it'll be really interesting to see how that plays out. I mean, I was shocked at how, but I love that cast. Even like people who people may have thought had misfired. If I were doing an all cast of season, I'd have David Sampson on it. You know, first off, I don't like the idea of that as a season, but you know, and I hear that on your show all the time.
I don't say it though. I'm not the one who brings it up.
I hear all of the ideas. Believe me, we're thinking of ideas all of the time.
Yeah.
You know, but there is a like I say, the game produces a winner, and for better or for worse, and sometimes for worse, it also produces a loser. And the person who is voted off, when were you voted off in All-Stars?
Fourth.
Oh, person voted off first, then, I can say.
Yeah, it wasn't first.
Yeah, it was Tina. But she got voted off for a reason, too. She got voted off because everybody knew that she's Sandra without being Sandra. You know, they knew that she's like, I love Tina. Tina is like, when I watched the second season, I read this article, because I'm an academic, actually.
Yes.
And I read this article that, like, was in one of, like, the Village Voice or something like that, that, like, talked about Survivor as the post-nuclear family. And they said Keith and Tina were the mom and the dad, and that Colby was the son, and Tina was, like, proving, like, you know, and it's a theory, and it's what it was, but Tina was, like, the new role of women, and she was the hand that rocked the cradle, and in the end, Colby was the son who couldn't go against his mother, and it cost him $1 million, but what a referendum on the family. And I thought that that was like really true. And when I was talking to Tina at All-Stars last year, I told her that and she said, what? So, you yeah. know, so there you go. There you go with academics and the whole thing. The game is played by instinct.
Yeah.
And, you know, and she won because like her instincts were really good and she deserved the win. I love her.
I would see, is there anything else that's a misconception from what people think about what goes on in casting than what ultimately that we haven't talked about?
I wouldn't know what the misconceptions are because I'm involved with it. So tell me what you think goes on in casting, and I'll tell you true or false if I can.
Well, I feel like we've
covered... Lynn Spillman doesn't shoot me when this is over. I think I've been
okay.
I love Lynn Spillman. She's my life, so I would never want her to shoot me, even in theory.
Yeah. I don't think that there's been anything that...
No, I haven't told any secrets, have I?
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing with that I don't think that is like, oh my God, you know, they're going to...
What are the things that you think are marginal, oh my God? What have you learned today?
Nothing. I haven't hit the button once to find an edit point.
Oh, well, okay.
You've been on fire, Ken.
Whoa. They needed me on Utopia.
Well, that's what I want to ask you about. Sort of like just like the state of reality TV, because you watch all of this stuff, you know,
for fun.
Yes.
It's terrible. I run the scripted division of the company and I go home and all I want to do is watch I definitely want to watch Survivor. I watched The Amazing Race. For some reason, I'm stuck on those New Jersey housewives and I hate them. You know, I feel that like that's the, anyhow, ask me questions and I will.
All right. Well, during Utopia that we had a lot of funny, Facebook exchanges.
I will take credit as saying that the man looked like a fetus. Okay. I am the one. Okay.
And
I thought everybody was saying that. I thought it was obvious. He looked like a fetus.
But you were worked. And at one point you were like, oh, that's it. I'm never watching this show again. And then the next episode came on and then you had a whole bunch of new observations.
I have some OCD about me, you know, is that like, it is very hard for me to quit something.
Yeah.
It is very hard for me to quit something. And, I'm not saying this with disrespect, but Utopia was a train wreck as far as I was concerned. And part of the reason I felt was its casting. I felt they cast only conflict, that there was no sex, there was no humor in the piece, that watching a convicted felon, you know, on a show go crazy in the first episode didn't make me feel like Utopia was a real concept. It was something that they were casting against. There was nobody there except for Bella, who was like a little making the circle, who like you felt like believed that there was a utopian society to create. And when you're identifying people as Huntress Hex and beekeeper, like, you know, person or whatever it is, you know, you're not casting for people who are really, here's the thing, is that all entertainment is, now I'm going academic again, but it's Aristotelian. It is the willing suspension of disbelief. Okay, these people are not shipwrecked on an island on Survivor. They're not. They're playing a game. But we go into this thing and we go, okay, here's like the fantasy is that they're on an island. It's like Peter Pan. They're playing games. They're voting for supremacy. And certainly in the first several seasons, when the marooning was as much a part of the show as everything else, the shipwreck was very, very important. Well, Utopia is a concept. And the willing suspension of disbelief is, these people are here to build a new society. There is not one person there who I would let build a window in my house, let alone a society. And when you are casting for, with no disrespect to all of the
contractor
crazy,
Ernesto.
Yeah, well, yes, I guess I should revise myself on the window part. You know, but I wasn't even sure he could build a window.
Yeah.
You know, I know Ernesto was like your big sore spot. My big sore spot was, I think, was the guy who was the criminal in the who was a
Fifth
convict.
Avenue Dave.
I don't remember their names, which is part of the problem, is that I felt that like they cast at odds with their concept. Mm-hmm. Now, secondly, in the state of reality as programming,
not the utopia state of freedom.
I would have gone on a field trip with you. I would have so gone on field trip.
We missed our chance.
You know, to the Halloween one, especially because I want to know how they built those cow costumes out of their meager earnings. Oh, Bella was painting. That's
yes,
right.
That's
it's
right.
Bella's painting profits. But, is that like you have to believe that people are cast to build a new society. And you can cast people who have – Bella was perfect casting for Utopia because her ideas may not have been – conventional, but her ideas were geared towards building a new society. And even polyamorous Dedeker.
I'm like, how soon we forget?
You see the problem, Rob. You know, yeah, I mean, okay, so you're saying like, you know, but again, it was so like selling into not what it is that we were willing to disbelieve was the concept, was people building a society. I didn't believe society building was a part of that show.
Yeah.
I believe conflict was a part of that show. And conflict is only exciting if, like, there's somebody, if there's a dog in the fight that you have.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't like those people. I was less tired of Red than you were. Because like at least he was like he was Old Faithful. He would like explode on the hour about something and at least give you a scene. He would give you a scene. But part of the problem was also
I don't know that a show without, in search of a concept is a network show. I don't know that, you know, didn't they do that show? What was it on one of the cable channels where there were people in the post-apocalyptic world living
the
in
colony,
house?
I think.
The Colony. Yeah. You know, where you go, okay, that's like kind of fun. You know, they're shut off. I can buy into the disbelief because they have skills. That was a better skill set piece than this one was, because you didn't believe that the skills that the people were bringing into the, you know, Survivor's a skill set too. We presume that everybody there is physically fit enough to play the show. If I had to, if a gun were at my head, I'd rather play Survivor than Big Brother. I'd rather play neither. I don't want to be on television.
Yeah.
You know, I like working behind the scenes, but a Big Brother would kill me. I mean, Big Brother, because you can't escape those people. And I would be very, very upset to be hanging around with those people all the time. And I thought, I didn't like the season this year.
Yeah. Why? What was it about the Big Brother cast?
Because it was like Redemption Island and One World.
Yeah.
Is that you had a superior player cast against people who were not as good at the game. And to me, what I loved about season 28, which is the one that was Cagayan,
yeah,
as you say, Cagayan, you know, was that there were people playing the game balls out at different levels of sophistication. You had a chess master, knowledge of the game in Spencer. You had a by the seat of his pants, both with Tony and at some level. You had a mischief maker with Cass. You had a Fabio, you know, hail fellow, well-met athlete in Wu. You had like a really smart guy in David Samson. You had a gambler, and you had people with skill sets that were all involved in different forms of being strategic in life in a way that they approached the game. I love that season. I've loved a lot of seasons of Survivor, but I, you know, if I have to stop casting that show, I was really so like, my heart beats when I think about that cast. It was such a great cast of people, each of whom brought something to the party. You know, yeah.
Would it be hard for you to go back to casting at some point?
No.
I love that.
I love,
because some people want to go out on a high note. It's like the Seinfeld thing.
No, I would rather go out happy than go out on somebody else's measurement.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm telling you, my deal with Mark, and he knows I'm not kidding, is that as long as I can go back to Survivor, no matter what, they can fire me. And they will. You know, this happens. I'm in show business. This happens. You haven't. Oh, what did I just do?
Don't worry about it.
Okay. You know, I'm in show business. Of course I'll get fired. I'll get dragged out, you know, kicking and screaming. It'll happen. Or I will, you know, or something will happen. It's okay if I can go back, and after this interview, Lynn will have me. I would be back there, you know, yesterday. I love that. I love working with that crew of people. I love all of the hijinks that we get into. I love casting the show. I love meeting the people. I love having that job. I love being a part of this show. I love the show. I do.
How much pressure is there from you talked about the Lisa Welchels and the John Rockers. Is that something that
I love it? Well, first of all, Lisa Welchel, I do want to say this. My very first job in show business, I am an old man, was as a casting associate on Facts of Life. And the way Lisa Welchel put it out there that she wanted to play the game, she tweeted on Twitter, which somebody's going to have to explain to me someday. I don't get it, but yeah. She tweeted.
Dan Lembo will explain it all.
Yeah, he tweeted me recently. You know, that she was like, you know, she said something and she said, "Survivor producers, I'm ready." And I come from Movies of the Week, and Movies of the Week is about finding people. Movies of the Week is about finding the person who wrote the book, finding the fact based story. I found Lisa Welchel in about two moves, and I said, "You tweeted for Survivor producers. Give me a call." I have a message, which has probably now been erased, you know, on my phone, where she is screaming, you know, that they found her. Lisa Welchel, I want to say this. If she had not been Blair on Facts of Life, Lisa Welchel would have been on Survivor. She was a Midwestern mom and wife who had spent her life living for her kids, had very strong faith-based values, had worked out, had been on a 29-day, I'm sure, biblical fast, you know, all of that kind of stuff, who was, by the way, just in reference, a super fan, has never missed the show, has a party every night that the show airs for her family, loves the show, wanted to play the game. The thing that amazed me was two people knew who she was at finals, and nobody else knew who she was.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was Snowy,
yes,
who said, I would so bond with Blair. And Denise, who never let on that she knew who she was. And Denise said, I know who she is, and I know that our values are different, but we're both moms. The mom thing is like huge. You know, there's a reason moms play the game. You know, there's a reason why Muffin is working here. She mm-hmm. is a mom. There's a reason why Holly Hoffman worked. There's a reason why Sandra worked. These people are really into Vesepia. These people are really good at doing something which you and I aren't capable of doing, which is listening to other people and inserting themselves subtly. You and I do not possess the gift of subtlety. It is not our strong suit.
Yeah.
We have to, and it may be very, very male, but the hand that rocks the cradle also sometimes gets the million, you know? It's like I was delighted. And as far as Survivor, I don't believe, this is my own perspective as a viewer, we don't do narrative, but John Rocker has a narrative. John Rocker is a guy who disputes, I'm looking for a word, who disparages words that he said. He's a guy who says, I was edited badly, right? Mm-hmm. From his interview years ago. Will they find out who he is? Do they know who he is? Is that who he is? Will he be able to play who he is? All of that kind of stuff. He's a physical powerhouse, you know? And so the question that you ask yourself as a viewer is he going to make merge? I mean, if you're a loyal viewer, you're going to go, is he going to make merge? Because, like, they're going to figure out who he is, and he's, like, an asshole and, you know, a reputed asshole. You know, he's got a lot to live with. And you and I talked about this online as well. If I were the guy, I would not say I was Gary Hodgkins.
Yeah.
You know, although that's a different level.
I think we were talking about this, was it over the summer about Frankie Grande?
Yeah.
Was it about John Rocker?
Once they identified him.
Yeah.
I would totally say, I'm John Rocker.
Day one.
I wouldn't like do it around the campfire, but if people would say to me, I go, look, you know, people are going to talk about this. They probably are. I just want you to know, I'm like a guy with a past, and I'm here to play the game partly to make up for a past. I like said some horrible things that were misquoted, but I got to say, if they were out there, I have to take ownership of them. I'm not that person, and that's what I'm here to show.
Yeah.
I think it is so much safer than having people feel deceived by who you are or feel that like they've been manipulated by it or whatever it is. But I think it's a great piece of casting. I'm all about it. I don't like the word stunt casting. It's like he is a viable player of the game just as much as Crystal Cox is, who's an Olympian who can't climb the hill. You know, I mean, it's like these people are interesting. You know, it is, you know, Jonathan Penner, what's your story? Everybody's got a story that they're telling on the piece. I would so own my story, because we all do it if we're playing the game. If you're playing the game, own your story. And if you're applying for the game, own your story, not your narrative. I don't care about like how playing this will like bring you closer to your father who you were divorced from. I want to see that in your personality. I want to know that that's who you are, that that informs you. But I'm smart enough as someone who's like watching the tapes and stuff like that. I know where it is that like the buttons are that you're going to press. I know the moments that like are going to make you emotional and be honest and like stuff like that. That's trust us to do our job, but bring me something to work with.
What if you don't have something to work with?
Everybody has something to work with. Everybody has to take ownership of who they are. Look, I would say this. If you go to parties and you stand, you know, next to the dip and like all you do all night is like eat onion dip, this is not your game show. It's not your game show. If you like go camping,
Yeah.
Go camping because you're, I mean, yes, if you're an onion dipper, you're not right for the show. But on the other hand, if you're the person who sits on the bench but plays one inning every time and always loses the game, that's a story. Tell me that story. I'm all about it. Like, you suck. You suck at life, but like, you have compensated for it by doing something else. You know, find how to make your weakness a strength. But you can't, I'm telling you this, you cannot turn your weakness into a strength on a tape.
Mm-hmm.
It is a life skill. You are who you are, the luggage that you carry through your life. You know, do you unpack that in a way that's interesting? Do you represent yourself in a way that I want to get to know you, however screwed up you are? You know, there's a lot of criterion to make the show. It, as I said to you at the beginning, it's a dice roll, you know, but like, you know, bring it. Bring me your best dice roll, and you probably won't make the show. What are the odds that you're going to be one of the 20? But keep rolling, and keep rolling proud, and keep focusing on who you are, what your strengths are. Own your weaknesses too. I'm going to tell you, if you don't like show tunes, I'm getting voted out. You know, I mean, it's like, on the other hand, we may have the most harmonic singing group, you know, when they're talking chocolate, you know, I got the song, you know, I mean, like, let me know that, like, I can annoy people because I am right all the time. It's not that I have to be right. I'm right all the time. And like, if people would come around, it would make it so much easier for all of us, because like, here's the thing. It's like I start really slow with people, but I, by the time I'm about halfway through the sprint, people love me, but most of them hate me. And so like, I do have to do damage control on that. I own it, you know, I own it. That's who I am. And maybe that is something that somebody who's not me, don't tell me you're going to make good television. I got a lot of people making a lot of informed choices and a lot of money for the choices they're making who know what good TV is. Come and be good TV. Be good TV, and you will move as far as we can move you in the process. And it is, you know, when we cut people, because it's really hard when you get to finals and you've developed relationships with a lot of people and not everybody makes it, you know, and you have to call. It is true. It is like, some people suck. I mean, I don't want to throw that baby out with the bathwater. Some people come to finals and tanks, but for the most part, we are presented at that level with a very high class problem, you know, which is that like, at some point we're going to have to let loose of some of the people who we really love, who don't work because we have a doorman, you know, who's better, or because like, there's someone.
Judd?
Whatever. I love Judd. I ran into Judd at the door. And like, I will tell you something about Judd though. That's really interesting. You know, just for a second, you know, Guatemala was my first experience in the casting thing. And every time, like, you saw Judd, like, you could see the doorman, you know, I didn't know that he was going to be such a scumbag on the island. And I love Judd too, but I didn't know that he was going to be a scumbag is wrong, but he was going to play.
But
as
he said
hard.
Scumbag.
He called everyone else a scumbag. I didn't know that he was going to play as hard and as sort of like angry and as Tony Soprano as he did. But like, the other thing is that like, that's a doorman thing too. It's like, you tip the doorman, and if you don't, you get a bad cab. I mean, like, it was all a part of it. So like, the wisdom of casting him, again, who knows? I don't know that they didn't know that it would unfold that way, but like, that's what you get, is you get the dimension of someone who like brings who he is to the game. There's no, it's a great piece of casting. I mean, it is, it's fabulous.
So much good information. I feel like that we unearthed to talk about all this stuff. I know that they've been pushing the commercials. Hey, CBS survivorcasting.com. That's the URL. If they're showing that during the show, does that mean that they don't have a lot of good tapes yet?
No,
does it mean
it means
nothing?
They're showing it during the show. It means that we want to have the vastest applicant. It doesn't mean send me another 6 applications. It means like, if you're out there and you're watching, I was telling you this like recently, if you did a whiteboard of like, I'm telling you, you know, I'm going to play favorites here, and it may not be true, but if you did the like people who are on the internet boards, the like rabid fans in the various groups, and then you did a circle of the people, I'm going to say the Rob has a podcast family, you know, you'd I'm making this up, 2,000 people, which is a lot, a generous guess for the board. For you, I'm going to say 8,000 people, probably more than that, watching it. And then you do the diagram of people who are watching the show. 9 million, 9 million versus the thousands. Television reaches like a huge audience. And like, here's the other thing, because I read a lot of online hate about the John Rocker casting, which I don't agree with. Who of those people, of those three subgroups, are going to stop watching the show because they didn't like one piece of casting? They love hating the show. I don't know why they want to spoil it. I don't get it. I don't understand spoiling the show. I mean, I just think that the fun of a mystery is knowing who did it, and anybody who wants to, but I, if you want to trust their information is accurate, is inaccurate, I mean, who cares? But we love the rabid fans. I'm sorry that they don't like some of the casting, but they're not going to not watch the show. Your people know that casting is kind of like a large thing, that they're not going to love all the choices. We love all the choices. I'm going to say that. Sometimes they don't work out. We don't just say, oh, let's just pick someone and throw them against the wall. It's not pasta. We are working very hard to bring you the best people that we can for each game. And the 9 million people, of whom some are watching for the first time, the show still performs. The show is 15 years old and it still performs. We do a quantitatively and qualitatively good job of the show. We keep working to do it better. We keep working to like make the cast exciting. We don't go for a template all the time. I agree with Russell's game? Who cares? He was a great character, after the fact. We would never say you're playing a character, but he is a great character in the Survivor pantheon because like he played balls out. I don't think he can ever win. I don't know that he could ever win the game, but he's a great player of the game. You have to admire that. That's the process, is to find people who are going to not be complacent, who are not going to phone it in, mm-hmm. who play the game the way that they live their lives, unapologetically, full throttle, in some kind of a version which like you and I can judge. That's our job as an audience, is to judge them and go, I like him, I don't like him, I like her, she's funny, oh, I get it, like she's really good at doing what she does. But I don't want them to be something for me. I want them to be at some level self-assured, self-contained, self-possessed enough to be comfortable in their skin. Discomfort in your skin is for the jock itch.
I think you've stumbled onto the hashtag in this conversation. But all-star seasons, yes. As the casting department, do you guys dread that all-star season that's going to be not fun, or does that present a fun challenge to find the all-stars that would
I
be
go
good
to work
back?
And do what they tell me? As a viewer, I really like new people. I really like new people. Part of my problem, and this is personal, is I do think when people come back, a lot of them have decided, this is who I am. This is who I'm going to be. I'm no longer going to be spontaneous. I'm going to be, I will say Boston Rob, for somebody who's played five times, I've never felt that he was playing the role of Boston Rob. I feel he's authentic, and I'm not going to particularize who is or who isn't, but I really want real people, whether they're famous people who have played athletics or our proverbial, animal scraper upper or whatever they are. I want them to come not be something for television. I want them to be something playing the game. I want them to be someone playing the game. I'm saying this as a fan. So my goal as a casting person, and I think it's everybody's goal as a casting person, is to get a cast full of people who are incentivized to play the game and want to play the game. But it is a large, large conveyor belt of responsibility, possibility, accountability, and a certain, if they say to us, we're going for all-star season, then we go for an all-star season. It's not our call to make. I have my preference as a viewer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that would just be so different between like when you're in casting and you're going through. I mean, I feel like this is like, you're looking for like the diamonds in the rough. I feel like, I think that's what I think would be fun about the job.
It's what I love. It is
like a scout, you're out there like watching, on these ball fields and looking for somebody that you could bring to the majors. And
you know what? You put in a tape and you go, I have a casting boner. You do. Yeah. You just, I'd rather casting boner than jock itch. Either way, I'm in the crotch. But I mean, you know, you look at a tape and like someone is there on tape and you go, I totally see them in this game. You can't make that up. You can't make that up. And for everything that like are the obligatories that we have to do to service our people, I think that like there is something about someone sending in the tape, getting them. I mean, listen, I've cast scripted. I've made 100 television movies. You know, it is a cruel room, a casting room. The, you know, in terms of the way that they talk about people, you know, at times it can be very cruel. And the, you know, sometimes cast is product. People love the network people, the survivor people. We love the process of watching a real person come in, be real, and be part of what we see the show as being. There is no greater moment professionally than watching someone hit their ball out of the park by taking ownership of who they are. And sometimes it takes a little coaxing. Sometimes it's right there in front of you. But there is nothing like that moment when someone realizes that the way to be what we want them to be is to be themselves. It is fantastic. And it's exciting to be a part of that. And I love it. I mean, I do. I miss it every day that I'm not there. I like, you know, I'm worried that they're going to like fire me quicker in scripted because I'm always over in the casting department driving Penny and Caitlin crazy.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I feel like we can go like a million different directions from here, but I think we should probably try to bring the Troyzan flying plane down for Atlantic. Was there anything that you wanted to get to that we didn't touch on?
No, I didn't talk about my scripted background at all, but your people probably don't care about that, which is which is fine. You know, I mean, I just like, you know, again, my survivor narrative would be reinvention is always possible. I am 59 years old. I'm going to be 60 this year. And like, it's like working at things like this that just makes me like really excited. I ran into you at a Rite Aid in front of my house. And then like the next week I ran into you at three different gyms that I go to.
Mm-hmm.
This is the most ridiculous thing in the world to say because we don't look at all alike, but you're like me. You've like invented this thing. It makes me really happy to know that someone has said, I'm going to do something that I want to do. I really wanted to put on plays in my bedroom when I was 7, and I still get to do it. And that like was the joy of working on Survivor for me.
Well, that's literally what I do here.
No, I'm telling you, I just stepped over three pillows and like your blanket, which needs washing, by the way. You should visit the dry cleaner. But nonetheless, I think it's like, no, I think people who create positivity, I hate to sound like this because I'm not a woo-woo person, but people who visualize things and make them happen, God knows I may have visualized my firing, Lynn's going to kick me in the ass, Mark's going to, you know, throw me out. But I love a company which, I love that Lynn Spillman said, I'm going to let a 50-year-old person come work for me, who I'm a lot younger than, you know, and I'm gonna be Lynn Spillman. I'm going to be like as tough on him as anybody else. And, you know, I learned so much from her. And Mark Burnett, you know, I worked for Brandon Tartikoff for 10 years. Who could be luckier than me? You know, I am very grateful to have played the game that I got to play. You know, everybody should play the game that they have to play. This is a television show. Play your game in your life, you know, and then you have something to get on the show for.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I hope that you will want to come back at some, maybe we could get like more like into detail on like things that are even actually happening as
that's
opposed
a patron
to
cast. Yeah. So,
no, I mean like
in
terms
say
of
that
like,
we just finished a movie in the Amazing Races hero location last night of Malta, which will be on next year, The Dove Keepers, which is a 4-hour miniseries. I'm doing a little plugging, which is, you know, the first project that I came to work on. And I'm very excited about the scripted world, too. We're like amazing. We're doing feature films and we're doing television series. And I love Mark and Roma. And, you know, I'm the happiest person in the world. But I will never, ever be unhappy casting Survivor. You know, I won't.
Yeah. Where is that a feature that's going to be in theaters or is it a
No, The Dove Keepers is a 4-hour for CBS. We're also doing a 12-hour for NBC, which is still in production and is airing at roughly the same time for NBC. We're doing a lot of pilot series. We're doing a feature film production of Ben-Hur, a remake of Ben-Hur, which is in the theaters. We're doing another small picture, which is starting next month, which I don't think I'm at liberty to discuss. Mm-hmm. We're doing a lot of stuff, and my world is full, but I'm reading instead of looking at tapes all day, and everything that you do that you love bears the price of the fact that you have to do it all the time. You know, I wish I'm taking a vacation, but I've worked 14 months. I wake up at 4:30 every morning and read scripts, and, you know, and then I go and I talk about them to the people I work with, and you know, I'm looking forward to a little vacation, but I'm very happy that I got to do what I wanted when I grew up.
Okay.
So, there you go.
Ken,
are we going with Jokic or are we going with Casting Boner?
Do you want to tweet? I know you're not a fan of
Twitting. I just don't understand it. I get Facebook because you get to like limit the people, but the Twitting thing is, are you just like broadcasting to the world?
Well, what you asked me to explain it recently, I felt like I was at a loss for explaining why it's good. And
but
why
thank you for favoring all six of the tweets that I've made in the 3 years I've been on Twitter. I appreciate that. What does that mean?
That means I liked it. Thumbs up.
Well, but like the people who are following me, I suspect are applicants. And I write my one thing on my Twitter profile is, here's what you won't get from following me, very much or cast.
Yes.
And I know that the people who are following me, all 12 of them are people who want to be cast on the show. I can't help you from twitting.
Yeah.
Twittering.
Do you want to give out your Twitter?
It's Ken Raskoff, I think. it's my name. Is that a mistake in the Twitter universe?
I don't know. Well, I feel like that by giving out your Twitter, though, I do feel like no matter what you've said here today, I feel like you're going to get a lot of follows from people.
You can
who
follow
are...
me, but the second that you talk to me about your application, I will do whatever the equivalent is of. You can block people.
Like,
Twitter,
I think
right?
you'll get a lot of, like, yeah, but could you just look at my tape? Could you just look at it?
I will not say no. I will just disappear from your horizon.
From your timeline. Yeah,
I will just disappear from you. I don't have time. You know, I feel bad, but, like, the show provides you an opportunity I'm not going to give you feedback. Your job is to like be great. That's the thing about reality television. Be great. And like you build the field and we will come. I can't construct your field. I could do a great tape of me. I could answer my questions on the phone, but I can't help you. I think I've given fair help here.
I think you've given a lot of help. Yeah.
Well, I hope so.
Because I think a lot of people are just like, well, what do I do? What do I do on the tape? And I think that's one of the reasons why you probably get a lot of tapes.
Yeah, tell me what you love. Tell me what you hate. Tell me, you know, these are questions that I'm going to ask you on the phone anyhow. It's like, is what's your superpower? You know, what's your kryptonite?
Mm-hmm.
What's like the thing that like makes you maddest? I'll give you a hypothetical. You know, you're in the 10 items or less and the person in front of you has 14 items. What do you do? You know, I ask yourself these questions. Be an actor. Ask yourself all of the questions. What makes me mad? What makes me happy? What are the things that piss me off? What are the things on Survivor that like are just like exactly what I would do? You know,
would you compare putting your Survivor application together with getting on an online dating site? Do you feel like that's a similar exercise?
Well, yes and no. Here's the problem. It's like, I know how many inches you've got. You know, I mean, it's like, here's the problem. It's like, I'm not.
Is that on the Survivor application?
Yes. Oh, 5'10" is how tall I am. You can lie to me, but I'm going to stand you up at the date. If you lie to me, I guess I can tell this story. I had someone, you sign something on the bottom. It's a legal document, the application that like, I swear that this is true. And I had someone send in an application and I went through the whole thing. And it was okay. It wasn't great. And then I looked because I did in the database of people who have been to our finals, and the person never disclosed to me that they'd been to finals, not once, but twice. And I called the person and I said, are you crazy? You know what? Why would you lie to me? And he said, I didn't lie. I didn't tell you. I said, you signed an affidavit that that one of the questions is, have you been to finals before? And you said, no, you lied to me. He said, well, this is a game of lying. I said, okay, here's the deal.
Good day, sir.
Yeah, no, I said, it's a game of lying if you get to play it. If you lie to the casting people, you don't get to play. That's how it works. And the fact that you don't understand the difference between those two things, we are putting people in a fantasy reality where they've been shipwrecked. You know, if like you haven't told me about the axe murder conviction and I put you on the, I mean, it's not going to happen, but it's like, why are you going to lie to me? How am I going to advocate someone who is not advocating themselves? Mm-hmm. You don't advocate yourselves by making up stories about yourself. So it's different than a dating site, because a dating site is to get someone interested in you. Survivor application is to get me inside your head in a real way. And you can't, I've said this probably more times, you can't fake it. By the time you get through our process, we will know. Mm-hmm. We will know what you're lying about. You know, if you're really serious contention, we will really know. We're not going to put people on the show who are surprises to us. You know, Kathy Seligman notwithstanding, you know, which is fan casting. You know, mm-hmm. We are not going to let you onto the show if you're not A, who we believe is like someone who is who we think you are and is not someone whom we feel is capable of playing the game. That's important to us. It's a fantasy. We don't want people to die. We don't want people to be in, I speak for myself. I don't want to watch a show where one of the contestants like takes an unreasonable risk, you know, or does something horrible. I want to watch people like blindside each other and use a second idol and like convince people that someone else is the target. That to me is the game. That's what I watch.
Will you go to the finale of the season?
Probably.
Yeah. Do you like to be there in the room?
I will tell you, I do. The most exciting finale I ever went to, oddly enough, was 21 Nicaragua, because it was where Fabio pulled all of these victories when you thought he was going to end. And it was like a horse race. I mean, people were standing in their chairs and cheering, and it was so exciting. I don't like sports. I may have mentioned I like musical theater, so you do the math. But I was so excited. I like kind of said, maybe football has something. You know, yeah. It was like really exciting to watch that. And there is something about being with the diehards, you know, who are invested in this, many of whom have a horse in the race, you know, many of whom just like, you know, the finale is filled with people who are passionate about this show, you know, and I like it. I really do like it. I've gone to every finale of every season that I've worked on. I'm actually taking a vacation starting Thanksgiving for 2 weeks after, and the finale is like right in there someplace.
I think it's the 17th.
Yeah, but I'm going to go. I can't miss the finale. I feel like it's a superstition. I don't know. I really don't know any of the people in this cast, but it's so exciting to be there and to like, you know, I you know, we have a whole post-reality, like, you know, casting discussion to have too. Cause like, I like the people, and certainly the people who I know from the cast, they are Facebook friends and they probably are following me. If I could figure out the twit thing, you know, they're probably like in that universe and stuff like that. And I like them, but it's because we had this experience together. I'm not invested. They all want to be on the show again. Most of them want to be on the show again. Fine. You know, if it's an all-star season, we're going to call everyone anyhow, probably, or do the math or whatever it is that we're going to do. But I, you know, we've been through that war together. That is very different than people who I talked to on the phone once, or people who I've never spoken to on the phone. And I don't know why, because Facebook, we all live in such a public society, but I just feel that like it's a really strange thing. And then they're going to write some comment on something which has nothing to do with it. Like, I want to be on Survivor or something like that. I don't want that. I want to report on stupid things that are really boring because we're all celebrities on our own Facebook page. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. Well, maybe it could all tie together if you can, next time you take a picture of your breakfast, if you could have a muffin for breakfast.
Muffin. Yes. And get the honey nut and say, this is a muffin in a sticky situation.
Yeah,
it's perfect. Like perfect.
All right, good. I don't think we're going to do better than that.
How long have we been doing this?
Almost 2 hours.
Oh, my God.
Almost two. The podcast time.
I thought it would be 5 minutes.
No, the podcast time is a whole different thing. It's like, you know, they should do a movie. The next movie.
The next Scorned?
You know, no. That's what, yeah, sure. Right. No, I was going to say, well, what's the McConaughey movie now?
Oh, Interstellar.
Interstellar,
yeah. Oh, my God. Ken makes shooting motion into his mouth, his brain goes, okay. I don't get it. Okay.
All right. Well, Ken, thank you so much.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
Yeah.
If I had time, I'd be correspondent on something.
On something? All right. Well,
but I don't have time.
Well, let's figure out the next
I'll do this again. I will do this again if you will have me. I have no idea if this is going to be purposeful or like, so, I'm telling you, if I'm unemployed, I will take, if they fire me because of this, I will be
this?
A correspondent.
Yeah. So, all right. So if
the good news is the next job is sitting here.
Yeah. If Mark Burnett fires you.
It's and possible.
Then,
it'll
and,
happen.
And then Lynn doesn't want to have you back.
That'll happen.
Then the fallback after that would give you a contract.
Oh, my God.
You could be a correspondent.
I want to be the correspondent for Utopia Post Show.
All right. You can track the Utopia people down.
Believe me, I will.
Survivor going anywhere anytime soon? Can we expect much more Survivor in the future? Do you think that greener pastures are ahead for Survivor?
Is the question, is cancellation imminent?
I want to know, is Survivor going to be on for many more years, a few more years?
In your professional opinion. Survivor, they have thrown everything at Survivor, from Friends in the very early ages to Grey's Anatomy to everything. They moved Survivor. Everybody thought it would die. It is a war horse. It wins its time slot every single week, and it loses occasionally to an American Idol finale by 0.2 of a rating point or something like that, and that probably won't happen again either. You know, Survivor is a fantasy show with a cast of people that changes every time. It is a, dare I say it, CBS, a better version of Murder, She Wrote. It is a...
How dare I?
I'm going to see Angela Lansbury in Bly Spirit next month. I love her. She's a musical theater performer, you know.
Wow.
With lots of chops. 4 Tonys. 5 Tonys. I called Lynn because casting to me is the essence of that show. I know now from all of these years, it is a much bigger show than the casting, but there is no place I would rather be than like finding real people who want to play the best game. I mean, you can tell me this, the best game that has ever been played, you know, as a spectator sport. I'm sorry. It is like, for those of us who grew up playing Monopoly or football or whatever it is, it has something for everyone. I never tire of Survivor. I don't. I love the show. I'm telling you, I'm like a geek. I work on the show. I have never not only missed an episode, I own them at home and then I buy the commercial video.
What DVDs do you have waiting for you at your house today?
Today, according to UPS, when I get home from this, I have Nicaragua and Samoa courtesy of Amazon, $31.95 a piece via your website.
Oh, you Rob has a website.com/Amazon.
A little knee sucking here. Yeah. Kneecap sucking.
Good. Get in on those Black Friday deals.
Yeah, no, that's right. Are you going to, what are you selling now? Nature Sweets or earphones?
Nature Box?
Yeah, Nature Box. Yeah. Num Num Peanuts.
Yeah. Peanut butter nom nom. Mm. Just try some.
Yeah. Vitamita Vegemin. That's what you're going to be pushing next.
Yeah, I've got some other stuff over here I can give you I'll give you some swag on the way out.
I brought donuts today, by the way. Just so you know, the best apple fritters in the city.
All right, well, we're going to go downstairs. I'm going to have an apple fritter. I'll come back and close out the show. But Ken, again, thank you so much. And I know just speaking for the people that made it 2 hours through this podcast, we appreciate your time. And I'm sure a lot of people got a lot of good information.
I have nothing
about this
to do on Saturdays. It's this or read scripts. I'm so much happier here.
And I think this is going to be one of the podcasts that we do that I think for years to come, I think people are going to go back and listen to this. Hopefully.
Then they'll fire me every year.
Yeah. People that are trying to be on, you know, Survivor in the future are going to come back and listen to this. So I think this is going to be, I think you've given a lot of help to a lot of people, and maybe someday down the road there will be somebody.
I am your son.
Listened to this conversation, made a tape, and ultimately got on the show.
I will be very, very happy about that.
Off of future season
hey,
of Survivor.
Yeah, well, I don't get any more money for that.
We did
so,
it.
Yeah. All right. Thanks,
Ken,
Rob.
Thank you so much.
All right.
All right, everybody, there you have it. That was Ken Raskoff. Great job here on the podcast, coming in and sitting in the studio here with me for an ungodly amount of time. I very much appreciate that. very, very nice to always have somebody here, and especially somebody as knowledgeable as Ken, and very, very appreciative that he came and did this for us here today. All right, so I want to talk about a couple things coming up this week on Rob as a Podcast and talk about what our schedule is going to look like with the Thanksgiving holiday and everything. But first, I want to take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast, and those are our friends over at JibJab.com, because it's that time of year. You got to send out a lot of holiday cards to people, and you got to print out all these labels and figure out everybody's address and who moved and all the stuff, and you get a cramp in your hand because nobody even writes that much anymore. Everything's on the computer. So holiday cards can be a pain in the neck. All of the planning, got to get the stamps and everything. So that's why this year we're sending out hilarious e-cards with JibJab.com, because JibJab is the perfect way to make your cards stand out, and they're very memorable and they're so easy. You know, JibJab is, they do these funny dancing little animated cartoons that you put your face on. We used one of them and created a special Thanksgiving holiday greeting for the listeners of Rob as a Podcast. You could check out our holiday Thanksgiving greeting, and maybe we'll do one for the December holidays as well. But we did one just for Thanksgiving. You could check that out at robhasawebsite.com/jibjab. It's completely free. Just go look at what we did. I think you'll get a kick out of it. And you can see just how easy it is if you go ahead and make those personalized holiday greetings for you to share with your friends and family, because you can make a JibJab on your computer, tablet, or phone in seconds. Just pick the card, upload a picture, and then type in what you want to say and hit send. JibJab is going to save you money and hours of work, because at this time of year, time is very, very valuable. And they also give you an unlimited number of original, funny, personalized cards for every occasion. Everybody loves getting the e-cards from JibJab, so go make yours right now. You'll get an extra discount on JibJab.com with the promo code RHAP. So go to JibJab.com, play around, and use our promo code RHAP to save some money. Okay, so Thanksgiving is coming up, and so we're going to be on a little bit of a different schedule. Of course, we're going to have the exit interview with the latest team kicked off the Amazing Race on Monday. Then we are going to have the patron cast for all of the patrons of Rob's Podcast. That's going to be on Monday night. So that's going to be a long night for me on Monday night. And then on Wednesday, we're going to get back into Survivor. Survivor is going to be in its regularly scheduled time on Wednesday night. So no change because of the Thanksgiving holiday for Survivor. But then the exit interview for Survivor is going to be moved to the following Monday. So then no exit interview on Thursday. And then I think I'm going to do, because the Survivor podcast takes like probably from start to finish anywhere between like 8 to 10 hours with all the show prep that I have to do, I think I'm going to split it up into two separate shows. So there's going to be a part one interview where I'm going to be speaking with the winner of the original Survivor, Richard Hatch. I'm going to have an interview for Richard Hatch that I'll probably get that up sometime early Thursday afternoon, and then I'll do a separate show that's going to be the voicemail. So it's going to be everything that you normally get, just I'm going to be spreading it out over two episodes, and I'm not sure whether that the second episode is going to go up either on Friday or over the weekend, and then the exit interview is going to be on Monday. So it's going to be a little bit more spread out than it normally is, but just like a smart person at a Thanksgiving feast, you want to pace yourself. You want to, you know, have a little bit of turkey, let yourself digest, then move on, you know, save some room for dessert. So that's how we're going to approach the podcast this week. And of course, the Amazing Race wrap up, that's going to be still live in its scheduled time on Friday night at 9:15 with Jessica Lee. So busy week with the holiday and everything. Hope everybody is traveling safe if they're moving around the country or wherever they're going for Thanksgiving. Have a great week, everybody, and we'll talk to you again soon.